Dice Numbers. I am your host, Ryan Blackburn, and boy, do we have a great episode today for you guys. Really excited about this one. This is episode 3. We are recording this on a Monday night, set to come out soon on this Wednesday, and I'm here to introduce for the first time to Nuggets Numbers, fellow Denver Stiffs writer extraordinaire, Mr. Zach Mikosh. Zach, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Ryan. I'm excited. Episode 3. I don't even remember episode 3, but I'm sure it was far less sophisticated than yours is going to be. So, I'm happy that you had me on.
I doubt it, man. Hey, the pickaxe has been going strong for a long time, so glad that we can cross over with you today and have you on my podcast for the first time, because I've been on the pickaxe a number of times to clearly elevate the profile over there. So anyway,
I'm here to drag yours down a little bit.
Got to take some shots in there while I can. So, well, you know how this works. If you don't, if at home, you can play along as well. But the first segment that we are going to do is Guess the Nugget. What I'm going to do with Zach is I'm going to give him various hints. And after every hint, he has an opportunity to guess who the player is that we will talk about. And then we'll give them a few minutes of our time, talk about them, how they're doing this season. Next thing that we're going to do is talk about the lineup combinations for the Nuggets this year, seeing if we could discern anything from the data that's come along so far. And after that, I want to talk about some of the... We're gonna play another game. We'll go around the league and see what's going on there. So when you're ready, Zach, we'll play Guess the Nugget.
All right, I am ready. I want everybody to know that right before we go on the show, Ryan's like, yeah, I decided to make it a lot harder now, so I don't want anybody to come out thinking that I'm just the fool here on Nuggets Numbers. That's probably true anyways.
If you missed the first two episodes, Gordon Gross and Daniel Lewis both guessed the correct player on the first try, particularly because I screwed up giving them way too easy hints. So we're going a little bit more difficult with Zach. All right, so are you ready, Mr. Mikosh?
I'm ready.
All right, so the first hint is that this player has accumulated less than 10 turnovers on the year.
Ooh, less than 10. Less than 10. This is tough. I'm going to guess Monty Morris because I know he doesn't have very many.
I knew you would say that, and you are wrong. The answer is not Monty Morris. Though it is a good guess. He has been exceptional in terms of assist to turnover ratio for the Nuggets this year. All right, the next hint is that this player is fourth on the team in total offensive rebounds with 17.
That's a tough one. Let's go with Juancho Hernan Gomez.
That's the run. That is the one. So congratulations. You have guessed Juancho. Juancho's been great, man. The last hint was more than 50% of his field goal attempts were behind the arc. And the only two players that satisfied all of these categories were Juancho Hernan Gomez and Torrey Craig, surprisingly enough. So if you had guessed Torrey Craig, I would not have been surprised.
I would have been surprised, though, it just seems like Torrey Craig would have had more turnovers than just 10 so far this season.
He's such a low-usage player that we kind of forget that even though the turnovers seem a little bit bigger than they are, he's actually accumulated less on the year. But let's talk about Juancho. Juancho's been an excellent player, and probably the biggest difference between him and Torrey Craig this season so far has been the spacing. Torrey Craig... He started the year not playing, but when Will Barton went down, basically assumed the starting role for Will Barton, and he's probably not the best scenario for him. He's so far as the only rotation player in the Nuggets rotation with a negative net rating of -2.1. Torrey Craig shot 16% from three during that time. Right. It was just not a great fit. Wancho is now, he has now assumed the starting lineup position, and so I thought it would be prudent to talk about him. So far, nominal points, rebounds, assists average, but he's averaging 20.2 minutes to start the year. He played 30 minutes in his first start on at small forward on Sunday, and he's shooting 44% on the year from three. So is this kind of what you expected from Wancho Hernangómez to start the year?
Well, you know, I think he's shooting probably a little bit better than you even would expect. The thing is he's not taking a ton of threes per game right now, but that's probably a lot has been related to because he just hasn't been getting as many minutes, right? Whereas we saw when he started that game against Milwaukee, he gets, I think he had about 30 minutes. So as he gets more minutes, he'll get more opportunities and he'll start taking more three-point attempts. I would not have picked him to be as good as he's been from three-point land. He's shooting 44% from outside, which is phenomenal. I think that'll come back down as he, like I said, as he takes more attempts and he gets more minutes. But he, you know, this is – it's nice to see him and Malik Beasley, both these guys were players that you weren't sure, are they going to be part of the long-term plan of the Nuggets? And when you look to Wancho, you're like, all right, well, this guy's got to be able to be at least passable on defense, and then he's got to be, if he's a 40% three-point shooter, then boom, we've got a spot for him on this team. That's basically what he's doing this year. So it's a small pleasant surprise, because I think when we started the season, we weren't sure about these two guys and whether or not they were going to be able to make that leap to be more of a long-term part of the future.
And you touched on the passable defense. I think that that's really come to fruition this season, something that he hasn't really done in his first 2 years.
Right. He, I mean, you know, that's, it still remains to be seen though, right?
Yeah, no, I think it's still early in the year. This is his first time that he's really starting and playing the small forward position where he has to guard a lot more players off the dribble. I personally thought he did a decent job against Chris Middleton during the Milwaukee Bucks game. We will have, sure, the Nuggets will have played against James Harden and the Houston Rockets on Tuesday night after this podcast, or before this podcast has come out on Wednesday. So I think we'll definitely get a lot more information from that one as well. But thus far, I thought that Wancho's done a decent job. I look at the defense he played against Kyle Korver in his big game against the Cleveland Cavaliers. Korver only attempted one shot during that game, and they were trying to run him off screens basically the entire time he was out there, and Wancho stayed with him. So I think that there's definitely potential for him to be there and to be a reasonable option going forward. Let me ask you this. Do you think that Wancho's the best three-point shooter on the team right now?
That's actually a really good question. I'm trying to think who would challenge him, because, you know, Gary Harris and Jamal Murray have struggled this past week or so. Jokic is...
I don't think it's this past week either. Like, this is really more this past month.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, Gary got off to a really hot start. Jamal's been very up and down. Jokic has been too tentative at the three-point line to give him any sort of put him in that conversation. So it's a good point. It probably is Wancho. I mean, he shoots the best out of anybody, at least. And the thing about when you tie it back into the passable defenses, what we're seeing out of Wancho that we haven't necessarily seen out of some of the other guys on the team is he's giving that effort on defense. And with his length, and, you know, and the fact that he's a young guy, he's got enough speed, that almost alone, just with the effort, will give him a good enough game on the defensive end. But he's the guy who's putting forth that effort like everyone else is, and not seeing a fall off in his shooting efficiency where we're seeing a lot of the other guys are tending to struggle, like we talked about with the backcourt. Wancho's shooting the ball as good as he's ever shot at least from three-point land speaking. So there's something to be said there about this guy, about him being, you know, a more of a complete player. Now, will he be the best three-point shooter on the team? again, we're fixing to find out, right? Because he's going to get a lot more shots as we move forward, provided that he continues to stay in the starting lineup, at least until Will Barton comes back. We're going to get to know here over the next 4 or 5 weeks or so if Juancho can be the top three-point threat on the team, because that role alone, passable defender and 40% plus three-point shooter, that role alone is something that every team needs, and the Nuggets don't have it with anybody else.
One of the biggest problems that Denver's had so far with their starting unit, and we'll touch on this a little bit later too, was that opponents really forced Denver to utilize Torrey Craig in a way that he had to make those threes, and he couldn't do it. He just wasn't able to do it in that way. Something that 16%. Juancho, 16% is not great, Bob. But Juancho 60%. In that. Juancho in that way is far more dangerous, and he's somebody that I don't think the opposing team is going to dare them to make shots in that way. He will have those opportunities, and he's proven that he can knock them down in basically any situation. So it'll be interesting to see what he does going forward. Do you think he'll be the starting small forward until Barton returns?
Coach talked about how he might play the matchups night in, night out. And so a game against Milwaukee, you could see how that matchup, you want maybe a little bit more length with Chris Middleton. You using Juancho out there gives you more ability to switch on Giannis in pick and roll situations. So I could see, I guess now, against the Houston Rockets, which I'm not sure who you have. I mean, Houston's got so much weird things going on now with the whole Melo scenario. Who does Houston start at small forward?
I was just thinking, I think they start James Ennis, but I could be wrong. James Ennis really is he's a 6'8" guy, very much a standstill shooting threat. Not going to be that big of a deal against him. They have started Eric Gordon in the past, but yeah, James Ennis has started every game he's played in so far.
Gotcha. So yeah, if you're talking about a guy like that, I mean, you could see maybe Malik Beasley might be a player that gives them a matchup they like a little bit more in there. But that's the only thing I could see him going back and forth. I don't think he's going back to Torrey Craig. I think it's going to be between Beasley and Juancho, and that would be the only way he might go back and forth between those two guys until Barton comes back.
Fair enough. What about after Barton returns? What do you see Juancho's role being going forward?
That's going to be tough for Coach to figure out. He's going to have a lot to figure out with Barton coming back. And then, of course, Isaiah Thomas when he comes back too, just because those guys, you can shift guys around on the wings, guys like a Malik Beasley, guys like a Torrey Craig. And when you get those, even a guy like Isaiah Thomas, who's going to play point guard, he's going to probably push Jamal Murray more minutes into playing at the two guard, which means Barton's going to play more three guard, or not three guard, he's going to play more small forward.
Right.
You're going to see, he's probably going to not, it's going to be hard to bench Monty Morris. So you're going to probably see some situations where you might play Isaiah Thomas and Monty Morris together, which means maybe Gayer Harris is playing the three or something like that. So they're going to get squeezed on minutes, but I think right now, at least, it looks like Juancho, I think, somebody's going to be on the outside looking in, and it's going to be probably Torrey Craig, I think, one. And then I think possibly even a second player, and that's going to be between Juancho or Malik Beasley. Right now, I think Juancho's got the inside track to keep that minutes and being maybe a 20-minute or so per game guy off the bench, gives them some shooting off the bench, can come in at power forward to play in some smaller lineups, can go in small forward, obviously, in bigger lineups. That's some versatility that the Nuggets would like. It's just going to be a matter of which guy can defend between him and Beasley, which one does Coach trust late in games, and then that's going to be the guy who ends up getting the minutes once everybody starts getting healthy.
You mentioned him occasionally going to the power forward position and having the flexibility to be able to do that. One tidbit that I want to bring up here, you didn't even mention Trey Lyles going to the bench and sitting down. Of the 166 players so far in the NBA to shoot 30-plus threes, Wanchope has been incredible, as we know. 21st in the NBA in three-point percentage thus far. 21 out of 166 is really good. Trey Lyles is last. He is dead last with 166 out of 166, 22.7% from three. And while that seems a little bit, that seems really, really bad, it has crept up even if you can say that over the past couple of games with how he's shot the ball. But it stands to reason, if Lyles' three-point shot does not come back to reality where it needs to be, couldn't Wancho spend some time at power forward?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. If that, you know, if these things hold, and you see Wancho continue to shoot 44% from the free throw, or not from the free throw line, from the three-point line, and Lyles shoot, yeah, that would be rough. Those are Mason Plumlee numbers. Who's 100% from the three-point line? There's some Nuggets numbers for you this season. But, you know, I mean, if Wancho keeps up above 40% and Trey Lyles is hovering around the even low 30s and you're getting a squeeze for minutes, then sure, you could absolutely see him taking some minutes. Again, though, it's going to come down to which one of these guys is going to play defense. Trey's got a little bit more, a little bit better build to him physically, I would say. He's probably a little bit more equipped to handle bigger power forwards than Wancho is. So that's going to be up to Wancho for him to be able to slow those guys down when he maybe doesn't have the size advantage like he does. Like I said before, I mean, on defense, when he's that small forward, just the sheer effort alone, it kind of makes him a passable defender because he's got that length to go with it. That's not necessarily true of power forward. He's going to have to be more disciplined, and he's going to have to, you know, there are still moments that I've seen, you know, I'm trying to think, it was maybe three games. It might have been the Memphis game when Wancho he just had a moment in the fourth quarter where he completely missed his rotation late in the fourth quarter, completely missed his rotation out on the perimeter and gave an easy layup. You can't have that kind of stuff happen. And if it does, it's going to be Trey Lyles who's still going to get the minutes because that's what coaches are going to do. Listen, it's great to have a guy shooting above 40% for three-point, but if he's not going to play defense or if he's struggling on defense, coach is going to go with the guy he trusts every single time.
It's good stuff right there. I tend to agree. It's going to be interesting, but it's one of those things where coach needs to stay flexible and play the guys who are playing well. Right. Rather than sticking with a set rotation sometimes where certain players playing poorly on certain nights might come back to bite them. So tell you what, let's go to a quick break and we will be right back. All right, we are back. Nuggets Numbers, episode 3 here. I'm with Zach Mikosh. We're going to get into some lineup combinations really quickly. Lots of things over the first few games to talk about. Now, kind of into November, we have a decent lineups sample size that we can really start talking about what works and what doesn't work. So, Zach, you ready for that?
Yep, let's do it.
All right, so right now, Denver's most played lineup combination by far has been Torrey Craig plus the starting unit. That's been the starters that Coach Malone has gone with for the past every game that Will Barton has not played in so far. It's played 142 minutes. It's minus 12 on the year in a kind of traditional plus minus. So kind of goes to show, hasn't been great, hasn't been the lineup that Denver's really been able to rely on to start off games well. The offensive rating for that unit is 96.3. That's 96.3 points per 100 possessions. Not a great number at all. It would be the worst mark in the NBA, actually. So would that lineup have been fine if Jamal Murray and Gary Harris were hitting their averages from the outside?
It would have been a lot more passable. This is also provided, are we also getting Paul Millsap of the past, you know, week and a half, and not necessarily the Paul Millsap of the first week and a half of the season? That's the other question that goes into that equation as well. And probably, I really like a lineup that's running Jokic ball when all four guys can shoot from the perimeter. I think that gives them that just gives them the maximum amount of options, and then gives them maximum amount of space to operate in the lane. As you saw, I mean, as you pointed out, when teams abandoned defending Torrey Craig at the three-point line, they used that guy to clog up the lane. And when Jokic was operating in the post, he was there to basically be the help defender on Jokic in the post, daring him to throw that kick out to Torrey Craig, because that was the shot they were willing to give up. If it's still shooting like that, and everybody else is shooting at their averages, you're probably passable, but it's still going to look clunky. You know, it's still not going to be great. I think you need, because what we're finding out is it doesn't matter if it's Yusuf Nurkic or Mason Plumlee or Paul Millsap when he's not hitting, or even one of your wings like a Torrey Craig. If you've got a guy who absolutely is zero threat from the outside, the opposition is just going to use him to basically be the double team on Jokic, and then leave that option open. So even when Gary Harris and Jamal Murray aren't hitting their shots, I mean, that just compounds the problem. But even when they're doing that, you still are putting it into a less than ideal situation.
I tend to agree. I usually try to think about these things from a process standpoint rather than a results standpoint. The fact that Jamal Murray and Gary Harris aren't shooting that well right now is not great, obviously, for Denver, but it's more of a testament, in my opinion, on Denver's ability to generate good looks inside and outside, stuff that's in rhythm, stuff that they're used to hitting. A lot of their options are screwed up because there's an extra member in the paint. And as we could see in that Milwaukee game that Wancho started, the Milwaukee Bucks were they were almost breathing a sigh of relief when the ball kind of came to Paul Millsap, because he was the worst option from three, I would say. And it turns out that when Paul Millsap's hitting those shots, he made them pay, and he was very good from that distance. Let me ask you this: do you think that Jamal Murray and Gary Harris will improve their 3-point percentage with Torrey Craig out of the lineup?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think just that they're going to improve their 3-point percentage regardless. They've been getting a lot of good looks, and they've just been missing. You know, they've just. Not had, for whatever reason, have been able to get the shots to go down. This is something we've seen with Jamal Murray specifically for every season. He always seems to start out slow. So I think they're going to get back there. Same with Gary Harris. I think what we saw at the beginning of the year is far more likely to be the norm than what we've been seeing this past week or so. The thing though is that about Harris is you know, he's a guy who, he's got to get back to using his dribble penetration skills that he developed in the offseason that was working so well for him in the very beginning of the year, because that's been what kind of gets him through his dry spells during a game. Lately, he's been settling for a lot more jumpers, and they haven't been falling for him, and that's why I think he's been struggling on offense. So I see them both getting back. It'll help with Wancho there. Just because, again, you've got one more defender now who's got to stay honest and stick with his man out to the perimeter, so that'll keep that spacing and it'll open these lanes for these guys to work off of Jokic as well. So if they're not hitting their shot, maybe they don't even have to create for themselves. You know, they can just cut to the lane like Gary's always been good at and get baskets that way. So I think it's going to come back, but I don't know if it's necessarily as much as Torrey Craig or just really regressing back to the mean.
I totally agree. Last one here. Do you think the defense will decline with Torrey Craig out of the lineup?
Well, it did the first night, right? I mean, the Milwaukee certainly
True.
Certainly scored plenty of points, and some of that was Look, I mean, Brook Lopez was unconscious. There's not much you can do about things. Things, I guess, phrases you didn't think you would say in 2018. But that's pretty much what it was, right? With Brook Lopez, that you're not going to expect that to happen. I don't care what coach says. You can't really game plan for that, for him to go all Steph Curry like that, you know. And then obviously they struggled to really stop those guys. But a lot of that was Milwaukee was just on fire. They were having one of those nights where all their shots were going down, and there was just not much the Nuggets could do. It'll be interesting to see because Torrey Craig is a very stingy defender, and that's been true this year as well. I mean, he has been very good on that end, and like I said, I think Wancho's one of the guys who really struggles specifically with just understanding where he's supposed to be on defense, and if we've seen that time and time again with this Nuggets team. If the guys just – if there's a breakdown in defensive IQ, then that really starts to hurt him. So
100%.
It could hurt them a bit, but I'm still waiting to see. I'm hoping it'll get better with Wancho.
I think I agree there. I tend to think that Craig being the guy who spends most of the time on the opposing team's primary ball handler really helped the defense as a whole. Jamal Murray, as we kind of saw in that Milwaukee game, not great against the opposing team's primary ball handler in Eric Bledsoe or Malcolm Brogdon. He's struggling to take away straight line drives. So that's something to monitor going forward, I think. Let's move into some of the other lineups right now. One interesting note that I saw from the next 11 most played lineups, 11 is what else, is they were all positive. Everything else other than the starters with Craig seems over time to have been a positive mark. That's encouraging for Denver's other combinations. Their players are playing well together in different configurations, and it's something that I think Malone should continue to explore. The top three lineups that they've played in that stretch, Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Will Barton, Paul Millsap, Nikola Jokic, that lineup is still their best lineup plus minus wise. Only played 46 minutes, still great. I think that's something that Nuggets fans should continue to be excited about. They did play the Clippers and the Suns to open the year, but the Clippers have been decent. The Suns have been awful. So we'll have to see that going forward, see what happens. Another interesting thing, throw this in the back of your mind for future. That starting lineup with Craig was a minus 12 with 142 minutes played. Now, exchange out Jamal Murray for Monty Morris in that configuration. So you have Morris, Harris, Craig, Millsap, and Jokic. That lineup was a plus 27 in 22 minutes played so far this year. Your thoughts on that?
That's not bad. I think that speaks a lot to what we've been seeing with Monty Morris. Like I said, you can't, when Isaiah Thomas comes back, you can't bench Monty Morris. You're going to have to find minutes for this guy because he takes care of the basketball. That's why they're plus 27. They don't give up live ball turnovers when Monty Morris is in there. Whereas Jamal Murray, I mean, that's been the biggest knock on him this season. Even when he scored 48 points against the Celtics, he started off he also had five turnovers, most of which in that first quarter. And that really put the Nuggets behind early on. Monty Morris takes care of the basketball, and doing that limits the points off of turnovers that the other team is getting, and that's been a huge problem for the Nuggets as well. It was a huge problem against Milwaukee, and they're gonna have to button that up. So it's not surprising. I mean, that's why you think. I mean, imagine the lineups with Monty Morris, Gary Harris, Will Barton, Paul Millsap, and Nikola Jokic. But that lineup will end up. It could end up being phenomenal if we get a chance to see it, but it's going to be something that coach is going to have to figure out because, like I said, as the data proves, I mean, Monty Morris is an absolute positive when he's on the court.
Definitely agree with that. It's something interesting to see going forward. Monty is definitely more of a traditional point guard in every term of the word. Not as efficient as you would probably like him in his own scoring, but gosh darn, right, does that guy pass the hell out of the ball and not turn it over. It is an excellent thing to see going forward. Last one here, Murray, Harris, Beasley, Millsap, Jokic. So basically the starters plus Beasley has been plus 26 in 41 minutes. That is also encouraging, I'd say. So if Malone is going to different lineups going forward, Beasley has been a solid presence in there. All right, we'll move on to – oh, actually, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the thing that Beasley gives you is he gives you that athleticism from the wing. He really lets you run when he's in there, and especially with guys like Harris and Murray, all those guys are wanting to get out and run. And you've got guys like Jokic and Millsap, bigs who can bring the ball up the court, bigs who can pass the ball up the court and get out on the to get the break started. So it's again not surprising to see that is a positive combination, because that's a different dynamic that they can bring when they've got Malik Beasley in.
100%. Want to move into three-man trios, because I think that there are some interesting points that I want to make here. One of the three-man trios that was really surprisingly great was Gary Harris, Trey Lyles, and Mason Plumlee. They've only played 60 minutes together this year, but they're a plus 31 net rating, and with a 75.7 defensive rating. Their defense has been stellar, and the net rating has reflected that. One of the things that I think Michael Malone should be tempted to try over the course of the next couple of weeks is to switch Jamal Murray's role and Gary Harris's role. Give Monty Morris some more control of the second unit and play Gary Harris off ball, so he can still be a nice scorer in that unit. But that three-man combination, add Monty Morris to that, add Malik Beasley to that, and you have the makings of a really solid bench unit there. I wouldn't be surprised if he rolls that out over the next couple of weeks.
Sorry. So I didn't mean to cut you off there, Ryan. I mean, no, we're talking to these guys about being these guys who are positives and the way they affect the court, because they take care of the basketball. They're bringing high energy. Jamal Murray and Gary Harris are really good. They're a really, really powerful backcourt. They're struggling right now, but those guys have a scoring prowess that makes them a problem for every single team. And you add players like a Beasley or a Morris to that combination, that backcourt, and it really opens things up. I love the Monty Morris, Gary Harris, Jamal Murray three guard lineup, because it gives basically the ball into Morris, and if you can get Jokic in there as well with either Millsap or Lyles, you've got two playmakers, both at your point guard and your center, and you've got three shooters, two of which in Harris and Murray are dynamic scorers in their own right, and guys who can create for themselves. So it really makes it tough for the defense, because you've got Jokic doing one move and then the defense reacts, and then you can go to a counter, and maybe that means the ball gets swung around to Morris. Now Morris is going to operate something in a pick and roll with a guy like a Lyles or a pick and pop, or they've got a chance to run. We've seen them run DHOs with two guards or run pick and rolls with the two guard sets. They get so many different ways, counter moves and counters to counters that they can do when they add Morris into with Jokic and then with both their scores. I'm excited. I want to see that combo more. I think it's something that they in certain situations they should close out games with, and certainly when they need a change of pace or they need kind of a shot in the arm, that's something I would look for them to go to.
I think that's insightful for sure. Last one, little three-man combo here before we get into a different thing. Morris, Beasley, Hernan Gomez, that trio has spent most of their time in an all-bench lineup that also features Trey Lyles and Mason Plumlee. That lineup is a minus 9.1 net rating over 56 minutes, and the key thing there is an 84.5 offensive rating. Stop going all-bench. Don't do it.
Right.
It's not a good thing. It is. Jamal Murray and Gary Harris are decent scorers, especially for a bench unit. Use them. Definitely do not use those three in combination with Trey Lyles and Mason Plumlee going forward. There's just not enough scoring with that quintet.
Right. Yeah, they because Trey Lyles has, I mean, we got to wait to see with Trey Lyles if he can if he can score more, you know, and be a more reliable shooter from the outside. But when he's not, if you remember, I mean, he's one of the guys that was billed as being a big part of the scoring boost off the bench, especially with Isaiah Thomas not there, and now with Will Barton out as well. It's really hard if Lyles isn't hitting his shots. Now, I agree with you 100%. You know, you got to have Murray or you got to have Harris in there, and they've done a pretty good job of that early on. It seems like he's gone away from it. Coach has gone away from it more and gone with the all bench lineup, just because, I mean, look, the bench has been stellar, but as you point out right there, that's kind of like where their weakness has been when they don't have at least one starter with them. Hopefully you'll see less of that as well, because once you get Will Barton back, there's another guy who you can mix. You could have either Murray, Harris, or Barton in with your four bench players, and that gives you that score that I think you need to keep them as a positive.
All right, fair enough. We are going to move on from that now. Thank you for your help with these lineups. Going to play another game, last game to wrap things up. It's going to be called What's the Matter with Blank? Instead of What's the Matter with Airplane Food, we're going What's the Matter with different scenarios, things around the league. First one I'm going to give you, What's the Matter with Carmelo Anthony and Jeff Bezdelic?
What's the matter? Carmelo Anthony and Jeff Bezdelic. Well, there's some history there. Obviously, as you remember, Carmelo Anthony got Jeff Bezdelic fired, essentially, way back in 2004 with the Denver Nuggets. And so maybe there's something there. I think it's more, I mean, Melo's just washed. I mean, it's just what it is. It pains me to say it because I'm a big time, I'm a Melo supporter. But I mean, he's done, man. It's just done. We were talking about this on the Pickaxe with Gordon. It's eerily similar how he's following the same path as Allen Iverson, his former teammate, and now that, like, this is the Rockets are kind of his version of Iverson on the Grizzlies, right? It's pretty much.
I absolutely listened to that. It's a great listen. Just a quick timeline of events there. Carmelo Anthony is drafted by the Nuggets, plays a few games under Jeff Bezdelic. Bezdelic is fired. And then Carmelo Anthony leaves after that, and Jeff Bezdelic comes to the Houston Rockets. Carmelo Anthony then comes to the Houston Rockets. Immediately when that's announced, Jeff Bezdelic, he retires. And then when he unretires, Carmelo Anthony leaves. So I think that there may be something behind the scenes there that we're not quite privy to with the public eye. But I think that was just a really interesting timeline of events there. What's the matter with the Washington Wizards, man?
they're finding out how it's really hard to win in the NBA if you have a point guard who doesn't shoot particularly well. John Wall is a dynamic player, but one of the things that made him so dynamic is his athleticism. He's getting older. He's not quite as effective anymore. He's maybe lost some motivation, it seems like, and they don't have enough around him now to really make to be seemingly make a difference. I mean they've got talented players. Otto Porter is good. Bradley Beal is good. They're both good shooters. I mean, Bradley Beal has been excellent, but John Wall is just, I think he's a point guard who was meant for the 2000s and we're not the 2010s, and we're finally seeing that come to fruition with the Wizards.
John Wall, never been a particularly good shooter, shooting 30% from three this year, shooting a career low 71.4% from the free throw line. That's something that you can control as a player, and he just has not been focused, has not been as strong from that distance. Otto Porter averaging 10.6 points per game.
Right.
It's a very low total for a starting small forward. lots going on there that's going to, yeah, absolutely. Last one here, then I'll get you out of here. What's wrong with the Eastern Conference in general?
I know I somewhat disagree with this question.
Yeah.
I think nothing is wrong with the Eastern Conference because it's exciting again. Listen, the Toronto Raptors are really good. The Milwaukee Bucks, as we just saw last night, are really, really good. The Philadelphia 76ers just added Jimmy Butler. So there's tons going on. And you have the Boston Celtics, too. There's four teams now. Four teams. Look, I don't think any one of those teams has beaten the Warriors in a seven-game series, but I certainly think they're going to give them a run for their money. I think any one of, I look at, I guess to put the real test, if LeBron was still in the East on the Cavs, I think any one of those four teams could beat them. And I would actually even think them to be favored. So, I think it's exciting to see what we got going on in the East. Now, listen, the rest of it's kind of garbage. I mean, you got Philadelphia, or not Philadelphia, the Pacers. Indiana is still not bad, and of course Kemba Walker has been exciting to watch in Charlotte. So I think there's actually a lot going on in the East. I think we're finally going to start to see somewhat of a little bit of a shift, and at least at the top, the home court teams in the playoffs on the East are going to be legitimate teams that you say, yeah, these guys could challenge pretty much anybody in the West, with the exception of the Warriors, because let's face it, nobody else in the West is challenging the Warriors either. They're kind of a step above everybody else.
You know what's funny is I agree with everything you said. I think that there's a lot of challengers in the East that I think are going to be really good this year. You talked about Toronto, Milwaukee, Philadelphia just traded for Jimmy Butler. Boston's going to come back and round into form. But you know what's interesting is that everything statistically says that the Western Conference is still way superior. The West right now is 500 teams, has 11 500 teams or better. Two of them that aren't are Houston and Minnesota. Houston's going to improve. Minnesota right. should improve, in my opinion. The East, by extension, has just seven. Like, right. like we're talking, like, there's still something a little bit iffy going on there. And you talk about, we'll go winning percentages in general. The West has six teams that are above a 60% winning percentage right now. So, like, that's really the standard where you're a really good team. The East has just three. Boston right. is probably going to round into that form, but the West is still pretty good. And I think that people are now that the East is opened up to non-LeBron teams, people are kind of getting ahead of themselves a little bit on how quality these teams really are. The Nuggets stuck with Milwaukee the entire time yesterday, and Milwaukee is supposedly an Eastern Conference contender now, supposedly could give Golden State a lot of trouble. I just don't know if that's necessarily true. I don't think anybody's giving Golden State trouble, but we'll touch on that.
Milwaukee's got the one guy. I'll say Milwaukee's got the one guy who's going to go at Kevin Durant pound for pound in the NBA. That's the matchup that I think that would give them something to pause at least a little bit about. And then hey, they got Brook Lopez, three point marksman.
Hey, if anybody in the NBA is going to match Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, man, it's going to be Brook Lopez.
That's right.
All right, well, tell you what, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you to everybody for listening to Nuggets Numbers Episode 3. Zach Mikosh here, he's excellent. He's one of the best parts of Denver Stiffs. Just excellent writing all around, and he's a great leader in-house. You can follow his work on Twitter at Zach Mikosh. My work, if you so choose, at NBA Blackburn. Zach, do you have anything to plug before you get out of here?
Nothing to plug. Just keep on reading at Denver Stiffs. I appreciate Ryan. Appreciate you saving the lies till the end. You're far too good, far too kind, sir. But make sure you guys are checking everything out on Denver Stiffs. Also check out our YouTube channel. And if you have not, if you have not subscribed to the Denver Stiffs podcast network, I don't know what you guys are doing. Great shows like Nuggets Numbers, Pickats Pundits, The Dig, and also Full Court Press. Tons of different content coming up on that podcast network. Tons of different shows week in and week out. So make sure you guys are hitting that subscribe button, leaving us a rating and a review, and we would very much appreciate it.
It's crazy. Now we've got 2 to 3 podcasts a week on this platform. It's been a lot of fun. I've had a lot of fun kind of expanding the content window, and we're doing big things over at Denver Stiffs. So again, thank you, Zach, for coming on, and we will see you all next week.